We have officially reached the halfway point on these Football 52 podcasts with UNC head football coach Ed Lamb. I am Brady Hull. Coach, you know, I woke up this morning just happy to be alive. It was a crazy Tuesday for me, a little T-bone action on the old car. But here we sit, ready to rock and roll for another day.
Yeah, for those that are listening, you know, I just reached out like I typically do on a Tuesday night with a few ideas. It's a brief text message. I'm not really even sure. Like, from your perspective, it's probably pretty cryptic sometimes because I don't explain what I want to talk about.
I love that style.
It's two or three words, not even a complete sentence, and then you come in the next day and ask questions about that, mm-hmm. which I think plays well with the because the listeners are kind of like they're coming from ground zero too, right? And so those questions that you ask are really appropriate and help me to kind of better and more thoroughly articulate these thoughts that are going through my mind about the team. But you came back instead of coming back with your usual. You came back with some pictures, and Brady got T-boned yesterday in an intersection, and pickup truck ran a red light, and airbags went off, and airbags had so much force. It looks like you were beamed with a fastball in Major League Baseball, and shirt ripped and everything just from the force of the airbag.
Yeah, I was joking with the cops out there. I was like, those airbags, they're going to save you, but they might kill you in the process of that, too. Those are intense. I didn't realize they are, like, lined throughout the vehicle the way they are, because all of them popped out on the left side. So I learned a few things yesterday.
That's a tender spot, too. It got you in the ribs, and anybody who's had a cracked – you don't have a cracked rib.
No,
I can tell by the way you're walking and talking.
They checked me out there on site, which was really tough, because right when you get out of the car, it feels like you're on fire. With the way the force is and those bags burn you up. Yeah. So I go finally get out of traffic. I'm like Frogger trying to get away from there because I'm like, don't want to get hit again. EMTs, they get there and they're checking me out. And she said, well, I got to check your ribs if that's where it's hurting. So it's going to hurt pretty bad if that's the tender spot right now. So she's pushing pretty good on it. Yeah. But checked me out. I was good. You know, the guy that ran the red light, it's you learn a little bit. And I learned that he's probably in his 60s. Just lost his dad, so he's driving his dad's pickup. So I think they were having a hard time finding insurance and all that stuff. But I get out of the car, and you know he's frantic. And, you know he can't even complete sentences. So I just put my hand on his shoulder and I said, "I'm not dead.
Yeah,
it's a car. You're not dead. Nobody else is hurt. We'll be fine. We'll figure this out somehow."
Oh, what a great moment to find compassion. You know, we never know what somebody's going through, and I make that mistake all the time where I don't quite consider what people are going through. I was on a Delta flight last week where everybody was days late to their destination.
Sure.
And as soon as the plane landed, before the seatbelt thing dinged, this guy comes like cooking up the aisle. And by the time he got to the section where I was, and I wasn't in first class or anything, I want to make that clear, but by the time he got to kind of where I was in row 19 or something like that, the other people had started to stand up and he had to stop right there. But I was kind of annoyed because he's standing there and now I can't stand up, and I was in the aisle seat. And so I said something to him, and then he started to explain his problems, and I had my problems too. But you know, in the end, I was just like, man, I should have just kept my mouth shut, you know. And there was no fight or anything.
Sure.
Nothing that would have went viral if somebody
did. There's no Terrell Davis type moment coming out. Yeah.
I'm jealous of you that you got T-boned and took a, injury and all that, and were able to find compassion because, in that moment, I was just like upset.
And it's weird. I was more upset at that stage that was probably going to be the end of that car. I liked that car, and insurance, we could have a whole several hour show about insurance. You know, it's tough because we actually had it paid off. So now who knows what we're going to end up getting, but that's the frustrating part. It's like, man, we had it paid off, decent car, whatever that value is, though. I'm guessing that's what we'll get of what it was, 4 years old. So it's a racket. It's definitely something. So we'll see what happens. But I got the father-in-law's Jeep. So I feel like somebody in that bad boy. So that should protect me for a moment or two, at least.
Cool.
We'll see. Of course, my wife last night, she's like, now maybe we should look into a pickup. You know, I'm a farm kid. Used to drive that kind of stuff all the time. But, you know, I love the gas mileage situation, too. Mm-hmm. Because I never know where the days are going to take me. So that vehicle was nice for that. But my wife, I think, is ready to put me in like a tank or something like that, or Batmobile, maybe. We'll see.
Hey, that's great. She wanted to protect you.
Yeah,
that's good news. That's something positive that came out of that.
Well, the scary thing was, so 2 days ago, my wife and I are like, should we put our phones on the location link thing so we know where each other, just in case I get kidnapped or something. She'll know. So we did that like 2 days ago. So I get hit, and I don't know how this works, but my phone is now calling my wife.
Oh, wow.
And I'm not, you know, I got the 911 stuff going on my dash, all that stuff. I'm just trying to get out of the car. My first thought is not to get on the phone in the middle of the street. It's just to get out of my car, get my whatever, my computer, my wallet, get out of the car, and then get to safety. So there was like a 5, maybe 8 minute window where she's getting calls from me. She can see my car is in the middle of the road on Main Street. So she knows he probably got hit. But she's not hearing from me for like 5 to 10 minutes. So,
So
that part was pretty scary. So when I get a hold of her, she already knew. What is this world is crazy. She knew more about what happened than I did. I'm still trying to figure it out and come to. I think I was in shock a little bit. So I felt pretty bad for her. She was terrified in that moment.
That's cyborg stuff. We have technology on us that we're unaware of.
Well, it's calling 911 too. Yeah. And so I get through like the loudspeaker in my car, you know, and I know cops are on site, so 911's on the phone through my car because it just calls automatically, and also calling my wife at the same time. It's robots. And I just remember telling the woman on the phone, I just said, hey, cops are here. I was in a wreck. I'm okay. Thank you. And then that was it. So it was it made for an interesting journey for sure. But you know what? Just happy to be alive. I mean, the picture I showed you probably looks a lot like your football players do after a football game. So they're used to that kind of thing, Coach.
Yeah, I mean, that was a pretty significant bruise. And I've had some that look kind of like that. And I think I texted you back, that's going to turn purple.
Yeah.
Right now, it's kind of a reddish raspberry. Mm. And those things turn a pretty amazing shade of purple after a day.
It'll almost
two,
be beautiful, so. Right? Yeah, you got to look at the bright side of this thing. Well, and speaking of getting the guys back into it, team meetings, it's Wednesday as we're doing this. It's the last day of July. So we are in the last day without last day of the month without a football game. August, we will actually have a regular season football game. So we get back into practice. I know you guys got team meetings today, so we'll kind of get into that, what you're looking for at this stage. But before we get to that, I want to hear about the camping trip, too, because all the players that I've had on in the last couple of weeks, they all seem to light up when we talk about it. They seem pretty pumped about it. So everybody made it back okay, I'm assuming,
yes,
right?
That's number one is the safety. And there were a lot of mixed emotions about this camping trip because most of the guys think that I'm a little off my rocker, a little bit crazy. And so they weren't sure exactly, well, what is this camping trip? What is it going to be? And, you know, it was not – it's not set up as any type of physical test. It's not a survival test or anything like that. We had plenty of food. We had a very short list of things to bring. And it was interesting. One of the interesting things were, you know, like some of our guys that are struggle a little bit with, like, you know, the playbook or being on time as much as everybody else. And I want to be clear, like from a you know, in comparison with the regular population of teenagers, like all of our guys are super on point. But even over the course of a full year of training and practice and academics and everything, you know, there are guys that maybe have, you know, 3 to 5 lates. You know, they're 5 minutes late to this or that, right? And for our team, that kind of puts you in a bad light. It's really just probably a margin for human error. But some of the guys didn't bring the things that we put on the checklist to bring. They didn't bring warm clothes. They didn't bring what rain gear. We had two guys that didn't bring a sleeping bag. And
oh,
so
no.
They just thought they would just rough it and put on a pair of sweats at night and lay on the cots that were provided. And of course, you know, we were up at altitude and they got cold. And so other guys had to, you know, figure that out, and coaches, and we're kind of giving up our extra blankets and stuff like that and our extra clothes. And so it was really, I think there were the things that needed to be learned were learned. But most importantly, there were guys that moved from one group of friends to another group of friends. They were fishing together. They were hiking together. They were, you know, the players started to get obsessed with finding cell service. And so some of these guys went on a 3-hour hike to try to get a couple of bars of cell service. And it was really cool because, you know, instead of like just staying up there and being on social media, I'm sure they maybe checked that too, but so many of the guys called their mom when they got up to this, what they started to call Wi-Fi Mountain. And then they would come back and say, hey, we got two bars. And the other guys were like, 3 hours?
Trying to figure that is out. Is it worth it? Yeah.
So just a really cool experience where a lot of personality traits came out. We had, you know, the way we did our meals, there were tables designed for six, and one of the six are designated as the server to go up to the kitchen window and bring back a family style meal and replenish those bowls of whatever, you know, food there was. And then there's another designee who cleans the table and takes the dishes over and scrapes them off. And so you really got to see guys' personality, like, you know, who takes that serious, who sticks around and actually cleans their table. And then some other, you know, tables maybe all of a sudden just everybody was gone, and then another cleaner says, "Well, I'll just do the table next to me too, and pick up that slack." But really, really cool experience for players and coaches alike.
And it does. It sounds like it's a bonding moment too. It sounds like something from a movie or something, a sports movie that you're seeing. Is right before the season starts, you get an opportunity to get away from everything. I know we had Hunter Green on the show on Friday on the whole show, and he said he was actually looking forward to not having, you know, great reception. He was ready to just unplug. And I'm sure there's a group of guys that were kind of in that mode, but other guys are like, I really get anxious being that much unplugged. So it was probably fascinating to see their personalities outside of the football world. And I know you've done that too with team dinners and things like that, but this is kind of more of that experience away from the football field.
Well, I move around a lot. So the way this campground was set up, there were some wall tents, some canvas wall tents, and usually in a group of about 8 to 10 around a small fire pit. And there were about, and we'll call that a village, let's say. And there were about 6 or 7 villages that our guys were populating, 2 to a tent. And it was really cool because I wanted it randomized. We didn't assign roommates, and we didn't assign where guys should go find a spot to set up their stuff, to claim their tent. And so it wasn't just by position. It wasn't just by color of the skin. There was a great mixture. And I think part of that was just, you know, we got there and said, here's how to do it, go. Mm-hmm. And so guys couldn't spend a lot of time. It's like, there's an open tent, I'm taking it, you know. And then who's my neighbor? They found that out later. But anyway, because I'm the head coach, I know that not everybody is like excited for me to hang around all that long, right? There's just a different dynamic when the head coach is there. And so we had a group of coaches, and they were in a village, and I would stop by, check in with them, and then I would move on 5 minutes later, check in with the players. And what was really cool is some of the stuff that we talked about as a team back in January, going through the book Comfort Crisis and the rewilding of the camping that we were planning out months in advance at that time. Those guys were bringing that back up, and they're like, coach, yeah, my dopamine receptors are changing because, like, normally if there's a lull in a conversation with a group of guys, everybody just kind of pulls out their phones and it's not considered rude or whatever. We got no phones. And so when there's a lull in the conversation, somebody picks it up, and then there's that's kind of a new dopamine because I'm getting to know somebody in a different way than I would have if I had my phone here. And that was just really cool to see those guys harken all the way back to some lessons I was trying to teach them in the January, February, when we were doing some early episodes of this podcast, and they were bringing it up to me unscripted here, you know, halfway into our year-long podcast.
That's got to be rewarding too, where you know that some of that stuff is sticking. Maybe not everything is going to stick. It probably won't. But when some of those things do, and especially when they can use it for an event like that, for a trip like that, it's got to make you feel good because maybe they'll do that kind of thing in the middle of a game. You know, they go back to some of those things that you had talked about, the coaching staff had talked about, and maybe be able to pull that out in an actual game. So that's got to be fun.
Yeah, and before and after a game. You know, we had a devastating last few minutes loss last year where we pretty much dominated the game for 57 minutes, you know, and then just didn't build enough of a lead, and it didn't last. And we had, misfortune, but certainly some bad plays down the stretch. Maybe we can say we had some bad calls, whatever. And I was moving around the locker room after to some of the guys who were involved with some of the, you know, the more costly mistakes down the stretch. And, you know, my goal was to get in there and reassure those guys that they played a competitive game. They competed to win, and we didn't get it done. So we want to learn lessons from that. But at the same time, I'm behind them, and I made mistakes too. And I just wanted to share that message. And so many of the guys were already lost on their phone. It was like they couldn't make eye contact with me. They didn't know what I was trying to do. And it was one of the things that kind of led me to some of my off-season thoughts was, wow, I haven't established the relationships that I need to establish. I haven't established the type of expected communication that would need to happen in those moments. And our players are finding comfort in the wrong thing after something that should mean so much, you know, to jump on the phone 5 minutes after a loss like that, instead of them moving around and saying, hey, we got another game next week. You know, let's learn from this. We got this. It just the championship teams that I've been around have a totally different post-game locker room. Losing is not okay, and we show that by how we communicate. We don't just jump on our phones and go into our own world.
It reminds me a bit of from the movie Moneyball. Not saying it's that extreme, but the scene where Billy Bean goes in after a loss. And a bunch of guys, they're not looking at their phones, but they're up like dancing and clapping and having fun. And I remember that moment. It's a great scene where it's like, you know, hey, do you like to lose? Is losing fun and all that stuff? So not to say it's that extreme, but that's kind of where my brain was going hearing you describe that.
Yeah. I mean, you always have guys that are like, they're just fakers. I'm not talking about a football team, but just in life, you and I have met them, and maybe we've been that guy where you're, you know, I just compete at everything and I never lose. And, you know, like I get this sometimes as a coach, like I meet some guy around town who's trying to, you know, tell me that he just never loses. He competes so hard. Like you play enough sports, you play at a high enough level, losing happens. The key is losing is not okay. And that's really where I want to get this team is not that, like, eventually, you know, even if you set out to win forever. I remember when Pete Carroll was at USC and they had a great winning streak going, and the team mantra was win forever. Like the idea that you would pursue that, right? Mm-hmm. Well, they didn't win forever. Nobody ever has in the history of sport. I don't care if you're talking about Michael Jordan or the Bulls or you're talking about Tom Brady. Like, you don't win forever. You can pursue that, and it's a worthwhile goal. But how you react to a loss says much more about who you are as a competitor than, you know, kind of walking around saying you never lose.
It has been fascinating for me, and this podcast has taught me so much, because you talk about players and then a player's name keeps coming up and that piques my interest. So I'll reach out to that player and then we get him on the show. And I don't know how this is the closest I've ever been to this program through this podcast. So when I get the players on, it does feel like that vibe is starting to take hold. You know, hey, we want to win. That's what it's about. We've got each other's backs. All the things that you and I've talked about, I'm hearing it with these guys. Now, I don't know how comparable that is to years, you know, prior in the past, whatever, just looking at and hearing players discuss winning, losing, and that kind of thing. But it just seems like, man, when I'm sitting down with these guys, a lot of those same messages that you're talking about are really starting to spill over. And so it does seem a bit unique in a very good way. So that part, to me, is one of the more fascinating connections from this podcast and then outward to the rest of the players.
You know, what's really cool is you're not intending to do this, but you segued to – I only sent you two bullet points last night that they wanted to kind of review the camping trip, and there's, you know, more stories that we can come back to. But you also just segued into the first meeting today, because – the first meeting for us today is going to be pretty simple. We've had three team rules since I first got here, and those are number one, be early; number two, protect the team; and number three, compete relentlessly, compete to win, compete like hell. We've said that third one a couple of different ways in the time that I've been here, and like a lot of times when we've been talking on this podcast, I've been open with you about rethinking some assumptions. And so I wanted to talk to you because we're going to get rid of that third one, because that third one isn't so much a team rule. It's a process of winning. And that's really important, but it shouldn't be on the team rule. Like I call it a slide, because every day when I speak to the team, if there's a team meeting with the whole team, our director of football operations, our assistant director of football operations, from the time guys start showing up for that meeting 10, 15 minutes early, there's kind of a running slide that goes through the team rules, the team goals, and then the rest, you know, the rest of the slides wait until I actually start my talk, right? And I typically will have some slides. I don't want to bore the guys with a PowerPoint presentation, but I'll have just some things that they can look at, and most of it's kind of unscripted. What I'm talking to the guys, it's planned, but not, you know, I'm not following a specific script. So yeah, competing to win, there's no question. That's part of a process, and I do want to talk about that, and I do want that to be our main thing. But here's what I started to think about. I don't have a lot of questions about whether we're going to compete to win. When I first took this job, like I'll give you some insight. I don't know if we've talked about this before. Northern Colorado, from the time 10 years ago I was coaching in the Big Sky at Southern Utah, all of the coaches around the league have always known that Northern Colorado has talent and that they can beat you at any given time. You take 2015, SUU, I was at SUU, we won the outright Big Sky Championship, which doesn't happen very often. There's 13 teams. Typically, it's a tie for first. We won it outright. Another really good team that year was Portland State. Portland State beat two FBS teams that year. Mm. They throttled North Texas so bad, hung 62 points on them, that North Texas, the coach was fired at halftime.
Wow.
And he came out the second half and finished it, but he was fired at halftime. The decision was made to fire him at halftime.
That's insane.
Against Portland State. Right? Yeah. And this is North Texas. Like football's big there. There's a lot of resources. Like North Texas, maybe, you know, we're not talking about Texas or Texas A&M, but North Texas is a big time college football program, and Portland State just throttled them. They also crushed Washington State, a good Washington State team, right? You know who Portland State lost to that year? Northern Colorado. Mm. They lost here at Northern Colorado in Greeley. Northern Colorado has always had superior talent. What we have talked about in the past as coaches around the league is they don't play hard. They don't show up consistently, right? And so my obsession when I took this job was I got to get the players to compete. The talent is here. The coaches have always recruited well here. There's something about the school that draws talent. I don't know what it is. It could be a recruiting base. I'm finding those things out now, and we've talked about some of that, but there's always been talent. Okay, so I put that in the team rules. I don't even know how that's a team rule. But I look back at, when I was growing up in the Bay Area, my dad was a big Raiders fan. John Madden was kind of finishing his coaching career for the Oakland Raiders, but his mantras were still around. And he had two rules back then: be on time, play like hell. That was it. But that was also a different era of football. There's 240 pound offensive linemen in the late 70s, early 80s. It was you show up and play your way into shape in training camp. Lifting was kind of something some guys did, but not all of them. The game has far surpassed. I mean, the best college football teams now would crush the NFL teams of the 70s and 80s.
Sure.
It's just like the game, the athletes, not even talking the strategy, but the athletes have passed up what they were 30, 40 years ago. But I was always, to me, that was football, but it was also an era where, the number one receiver for the Raiders, Fred Biletnikoff, he's smoking on the sidelines. The coaches
sure.
smoked. I mean, it's just different time. Now, guys are different. They're smarter. And the point I want to make today to our players is one of the reasons we're going to move that from a rule to a process, the compete to win aspect. All of these players have value beyond what they're bringing to the team on game day to actually get a winning score. And it's important to separate that. Mental health awareness is a big issue now. Guys are more aware of their own mental health. And I want to make sure that the two team rules are something that they can accomplish every single day. Be early, protect the team.
Well, and those can be simple when you say them like that, but when you think about what goes into all that, being early, I mean, scheduling, planning ahead, and then protecting the team, that could be a lot of different things. That could just be making the right decisions individually so you're not making yourself a distraction for the rest of the team.
Yeah.
And I love to hear that too, because, talking about the fact that there has been talent here. There's been some really good football players that have come out of UNC for the past however many years, even going back to the D2 days. But that philosophy is real. When you talk about yeah, we have talent, but are we doing all the little things right? Are we showing up early? Are we putting the team first? Are we minimizing those distractions? That to me is, and especially after doing these podcasts with you, that is so much easier said than done. You have to, it has to be not a religion, but it almost has to be at something quite like that, where you are really focusing on those little things, because it's easy to just step back and go, well, I'm talented, that's what I'm going to rest on. No, it's everything else that goes into it that's ultimately going to separate, you know, maybe a couple of close losses or a lot of close losses, maybe a bunch of close wins instead.
In 2005 or 6 or something like that, I was coaching at San Diego under Jim Harbaugh, and that's a non-scholarship FCS program, and we had Northern Colorado on the schedule, and when the two teams showed up to warm up, there were two like instant realizations. The first was Northern Colorado is just athletically superior. There was just like no comparison looking at the two teams, right? But the vibe on the San Diego team versus the Northern Colorado team, even in warmups, was like, oh, it's game on here. This is going to be, you know, you got one team that was kind of doing their own thing, seemed even mildly disinterested, and then San Diego was like completely on point, and it ended up being a blowout because Northern Colorado just wasn't up for a test against a non-scholarship school that day. They felt like it was almost like they felt they were better, win or lose, they were better than San Diego. To them, the game wasn't on the line. They were bigger and stronger and faster, and that's all that mattered in their minds. And so, yeah, there's such a process to getting the guys to realize, okay, we've all put a lot into this. The goal is to win. Losing is not okay. We've got to bring confidence and poise, and we've got to have competitive greatness at game time.
Well, I think that's why, you know, every offseason, whether you get Phil Steele's college football preview or Lindy's college football preview, they have pages dedicated to upset watch from an FCS team versus an FBS team, because we know that's a real thing. Because there are a lot of those teams that they know they're good, they're extremely talented, but are they together? Do they have that group? I mean, I remember hearing stories throughout the state, throughout the country, where there's a handful of All-American type dudes, but maybe that All-American type dude was treated differently. He was allowed to come to practice late because he was taking this class, or he needed to do something different that separated himself from the team. And those things maybe not don't seem like the end of the world at the end of the day, but when you start to add those up, that can affect you, and it can cost you games, and of course upsets against maybe a lesser team as far as scholarship players and all that, because you have guys that perhaps do want it more, and they do have that sense of togetherness that starts from day one.
That's right, and that's why Tony Dungy, you know, one of his famous sayings was, "I'll put up with you as long as I have to."
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, yeah, as long as there's nobody else I can replace you with, as long as you're, you know, so good that you're making all of these guys around you win, that's great. But that's when teams crack. Is okay, game's on the line, and this guy that's been getting away with a lot doesn't deliver, and you don't win, and that's when it all turns, and that's when guys take their pads off, flip off the fans, walk out in the middle of the game. You know, and I'm alluding to an actual situation.
Like, sure.
When that crumbles, when you realize that you're not as good as you've portrayed, and other people on the field are good too, and you're not delivering the way that you have portrayed that you would, that's when a team crumbles. If you're allowing guys to get away with stuff like that.
Well, that's why we always say when you get one of your best players has got a good attitude. He's the hardest worker on the team. He shows up before everybody. He is displaying leadership on a constant basis. And we say that you're a coach's favorite type of guy. You're a coach's dream. It sounds cliche, but that's real. When you can get your star players to be that guy, because when it's the opposite and your star players are, you know, hey, I'm better than this. I don't need to show up as early because I'm that good. Then that is how you start to see that divide, especially when you see it take hold in an actual game.
Yeah, and we've got a group of guys right now that are just completely bought into that. And I've told you before. My sense going into this season, win or lose, winning is the goal. Losing's not okay, but win or lose, I feel like these guys are a reflection of me and our efforts as a team, win or lose. And so we'll learn from any disappointments and try to get better. But I just feel like these guys have put in the work, and they're doing it on and off the field. And we still have a group of guys that are trying to, let's say, burn the candle at both ends. They're trying to be all things. And sure, everybody wants to be. You don't put the kind of time in to just our minimum standard of training and not want to win, right? But there's a different levels of actually wanting to win. And the biggest maybe litmus test of that is, how willing are you to prepare, or what are you willing to sacrifice to win? And we still have a group of guys that aren't willing to sacrifice a lot to win, but they're not our best players. And that's really typical of any team. I think even a Super Bowl champion still mm-hmm. has guys that are trying to figure it out. There's still a hierarchy on those Super Bowl championship teams. Okay, who gives the most? Who's producing the most on game day? And then there's other guys that are just, you know, they're earlier in their career. They're late in their career. They haven't quite figured it out. They're not living up to their potential. They still can play a role. And as I said before, their value as a human being and as a teammate, you know, all the guys top to bottom on a team, it's way more important than their value on game day. And we always want to keep that in perspective. But this team is starting to show that makeup, where our best players are also our most committed. And I feel really good about how that relates to actually winning on game day.
Coach, and I know this wasn't on our list, but speaking of leadership and all that, just makes my brain want to go here. Your philosophy on the captain stuff, how does that work for you? How many captains? How do you figure out who your team captains are?
Different every year.
Yeah.
And I think if you know, as you and I have gotten to know each other in large part because of these an hour per week that we're spending together. And so I think you know that I'm willing to rethink. I'm willing to look at the current makeup, the current dynamic of our team, and adjust. And I think that's a critical part of being a coach who does the turnaround, and not all coaches are into that. In fact, I know a lot of coaches. I've got a lot of friends who are like, "You're pursuing the wrong track in this business. Stop doing the turnaround thing. You need to be at the places that always win." Mm. Right? And I've been at those places too. And there's a different type of fun in that when you know that pretty much every week you're going to have a better team, a better supported team. You've got more resources, et cetera, a more winning tradition. I love this. I love this task of turning around teams who haven't won in the past. And in UNC's case, it's kind of, I have to always clarify that with UNC was a top team in the country at the Division II level. And there is some pride and some alumni to tap into, and I think a community that cares. But, you know, make no mistake, this team has never had a Division I winning record. Winning records that it's had while being classified as Division I have been with Division II teams on the schedule, kind of a mixed schedule, mm-hmm. and adding those Division II victories. We don't play Division II teams anymore. We didn't play one last year. We don't playing one this year. It's an all Division I schedule, and a winning record would be the first time that's ever accomplished. And I think to be able to execute these turnarounds, you just completely have to be flexible on, well, what's appropriate this year. And so sometimes I'll just pick the captains. I know who I want. They've established leadership. I don't want to leave it up to a vote. I know that these guys might not be the most popular, but they are the representation of the coaches and the players that I want out in front of the team. This year, I feel like voting is probably really appropriate. And I want to get about halfway into camp to figure that out. But I just know that I'm predicting that all of the guys that I think would get a lot of votes are the guys that I would want in that role. And so I think we are going to – we didn't take it to a vote last year, but I think we're going to take it to a vote this year.
Well, that just goes to show you the change. Like you, and I love that too. Hey, every year is different how we're going to do it. If we have a lot of leaders that I trust – then you kind of trust a lot of those leaders to make the right decision as far as who those captains are going to be. But in a situation last year where everybody's getting to know everybody, you're still learning about these guys, you can't necessarily put something, because it is a big deal who the captain is, who the captains are, who are the real leaders of this team. But that's difficult to say when you're getting to know everybody, hey, we're going to put it up for a vote, because you don't know where they're going to vote. This just, I think this kind of displays the togetherness that this team has right now and your trust factor for these guys.
Big time. Yep. And I've had so many opportunities to preach culture. I know the players so much better. I was walking around this camp out we had, and a lot of the players said, how come we didn't do this last year, coach? And I just had to be very honest with them. I didn't know you guys as a team. I didn't know people's story. I didn't know their parents. I didn't know what they value. And I was uncomfortable bringing a bunch of guys up there. I didn't know if there were going to be booze in the backpacks, you know, drugs. I had no idea what the camp out would look like. I had no idea that if we did a camp out a year ago, I had no idea if it would result in the type of things that it has resulted for me in the past. I mean, we did it 6 times at Southern Utah, and every time we came back a closer team, more camaraderie, mm-hmm. new friendships, new understandings, new relationships. And that happened this year with UNC. I don't know that it would have happened last year. I think I could have seen last year's team spending 3 hours just to set up camp, kicking each other out of certain camps, like, hey, I want this person over here. Like, it was just a complete mess. And I'll take that on myself. Like, I had 6 months with these guys, but I didn't know where to start. The on-field stuff, we were good. I mean, we were lifting, we were working hard, we were practicing, we had good game plans, the coaches worked hard, the players bought in, but we had no camaraderie. It was very cliquish, and I don't think there was a unified vision of how to come together as a football team from a character standpoint. And I can put that entirely on myself. I'm not blaming, teenage boys for that. I'm just saying there's just a completely different dynamic. Now I know them. I know their backgrounds. I know their values. I know their parents. And one of the things I'm doing is bringing 3 to 5 guys in every day now for just an interview. Get to know them better now. Find out what their goals are individually, career-wise, for the team, for themselves, in football, out of football. And that really helps me to know the difference between a player who wants to make it to the NFL and is willing to say that, how to approach him when I see that he needs a course correction, versus a player that says, hey, coach, like, honestly, I'm realistic. The NFL is not in my future, but I want to be the very best college football player I can. That's two different approaches that I've got to use for those two different players.
Sure.
And really, I need to get to the point where if we have 120 players, I've got 120 understandings of different approaches.
Well, and I know you talked about last year being knowing these guys or being around for 6 months before you would have went on a camp or anything. But as we've talked about, it's not like you're around them 24/7 in those 6 months. You're not at an 8-hour job with them necessarily. They've got their workouts. They've got their practice. And it's not like you're sitting down conversing during all those times and learning about who they are. It takes, I would imagine, and this is why when we say it, it's a real thing. Year one for coaches, it's always just a kind of a crapshoot, at least from the media's perspective or the fans' perspective. If you're expecting a big season in year one, whether you have had a lot of success, which you have somewhere else, you probably should lower those expectations, because the football is one thing, but getting to know everybody is another thing. That's a real thing. And so it makes sense as to why, okay, we're not doing a player vote last year. We're not going on a camping trip, because you've got to take the entire year just to figure out who this team is and who these guys are. Now, as we started, we recharged with this Football 52 podcast. Every single week, it seems like there's a deeper understanding from you, from the players, from the coaching staff. So to me, that part is a very real thing. It does take time to get to know these players. There's a lot that goes into it.
In my first head coaching job, I've only had two now. It's at Southern Utah and Northern Colorado. But in my first head coaching job, I had no idea if I could be successful as a head football coach. I had no experience doing that. I had an idea how I wanted to do it. But one of the things that I say we, because like we had a coaching staff that was fairly consistent and didn't have a lot of turnover, I think one of the things we really established was we got better every single year. And I think there was one year where the wins went from 6 to 5, but we're actually a better team on that 5 year. And a lot of it has to do with who you play.
Sure. Yeah.
But it was clear that we were getting better every single year. until year six. We had a big setback with a lot of different reasons that aren't really pertinent to this show. And then year seven, we came roaring back in a way that would show that that program was just constantly being built from year one to year seven, our final year. And that's most important to me right now. You know, I look at TCU and what they did in Coach Dyke's first year, and it was like, you know, go from the previous coach getting fired, and now they go all the way to the national title game. Okay, amazing. Mm-hmm. But then in year two, fall off a cliff. Okay, why? I mean, I don't know. I'm not inside that program. But that to me is the big nightmare as a coach is, you know, do you think you got a handle on it and you didn't? Was it set up for your success?
Sure.
By the previous staff, and now are you making the team worse somehow? Right, and that's a big fear for all coaches, and so I'm still working through that. But I can just tell you my confidence, because of the knowledge I have of who these guys are and what they represent, my confidence is so much better this year, and my willingness to accept the results as my own. I've always done that in front of the media. I've always stepped forward, taken my share of the blame, not put anything on the players. And there's times where it's really painful because I know that the mistakes that we made shouldn't have been made, and I know the underlying causes for some of that to lack of success in the past. But you know, I have these guys' backs. But right now, I'm proud to stand in front of them. I'm proud to call them my team.
Well, and again, you get that sentiment from the players too. I always bring up the coaching staff when I talk to these guys. You know, you just want to see. They're going to say the right thing. They're not going to get on the air and go, no, actually, I'm not into that, Coach Lamb. No, they're going to say the right things. But I look at body language and I look at how their eyes light up a little bit. And that's where you see it. And that's when I walk away from this podcast and I say, yeah, I'm closer to this program than I've ever been. I'm buying it. I'm getting into it. I'm feeling it. And you get that with the players more than I've ever had. And I've had players on the shows over the years. And I do feel like you kind of go, sometimes with some of those players, it was going through the motions. We're just talking, oh, it's a lot of football cliches. That has not been my experience this year with every single guy I've had on. The Van Shield interview sticks out. Hunter was phenomenal last week. Ezra Ecubon lighting up. And we had Miles McClarity as well. Guys from completely different positions, completely different age groups. So you are seeing it, and that part is really cool throughout the process. Coach, we've talked about, last week we talked a little bit about the light situation. We don't have to go there again. Mm-hmm. But I know that your goals are on the football field. It's to win. It's to make this team better. But obviously winning, everything starts to fall into place. It gets easier to get players. More people are coming to the games. Maybe there's more dollars to put toward resources and things. Do you spend a lot of time thinking, because I know a lot of Bears fans want to know, like, is there that kind of goal where maybe someday the locker rooms are, you have the locker rooms, you know, actually by the stadium.
Yeah.
Do you spend a lot of time thinking about that kind of thing? Or is that just, hey, no, I gotta get success on the field first, and then that stuff starts to hit?
Yes, as a coach, I think, you know, I don't want to be like completely uneducated, head in the sand. Like, I know what the task is. I know that our task here is to do more with less. I know that when Northern Colorado wins the championship, it's the most amazing story possible in the Big Sky Conference. And so I signed up for that job, you know, and there are, you know, I want to say this and still sound humble, like finding a job in football is not hard. I've been doing this a long time. I've got a large network. There are plenty of jobs out there, and there are plenty of jobs that pay really well. They're lucrative, right? That's not what I'm in it for at this point for me in this business. It's about doing more with less. It's about building an amazing story. It's about having guys 10, 20 years from now say, Coach, what we did was amazing. Right. And I've done that before and I'm addicted to it. And so I can't spend my time on that. My philosophy, and our coaches know this well, winning begets support. Winning results in support, not the other way around. Now, you know, I hope that the community and the athletic director and the president and fundraisers on campus, I hope they're doing their job the reverse of that. I hope they're thinking, okay, the more support we can give them, the better chance they have to win. But that's not the way I can think of it. I can only think of it in terms of my daily process, the things I'm focused on, the things I can control. Winning begets support. And that's what we were 100% focused on. I think I've told you before, the very first team meeting I had with this team, I know there's frustrations. I'm a new guy coming in. And so I just asked the guys. I opened up on the big screen in the meeting room. I opened up my email account. I addressed it to Darren Dunn. And I said, lay it out there. What can the school do better to support UNC? What kind of things are obstacles here to success that we have to work through? What kind of things are you frustrated about? And then at the end of that, I said, okay, here's the deal. That's not our job. Stop talking about that crap. You're not going to hear me talk about it. I don't want you guys talking about it. Our job is to win regardless of any obstacles here. That's what makes it such a special opportunity. You've got an athletic director that will work his tail off to try to get these things done. But nobody's a magician, right? Financial realities are what they are. And when we win this Big Sky Championship, us, Darren Dunn, Andy Feinstein, all the people in Greeley, they're going to share in that story because it will be amazing, in part because we don't have whatever. You fill in the blank. What sure. don't we have? Okay, yeah. we don't have lights. That was a subject.
That was last week. Yeah.
Can we win a championship still? Yes. Okay. We don't have the budget that the other schools have. We're far below the median, right, in our league. Can we still win the championship? My answer is yes. We don't have, we have a track around our field in the stadium. We're one of the last teams in Division I to still have a track around the field separating the fans. It does impact the game day environment somewhat. Does that stop us from winning a championship? No. Sac State also has a track. They've won 3 championships in the last 5 years, right? There's none of these things will stop us from winning a championship. So let's focus on stuff that wins championships, and it's not trying to be the fundraiser. If you want to go be a fundraiser, if you want to go do the athletic director's job, go be an intern, quit the football team. We got a job to do, and it starts with lifting weights.
I think you mentioned that last week, too, when we talked about the lights, and you said, hey, we got to get protein to these guys first. Like, that's the thing. Get the guys. And I love that, because it's not getting too caught up with the pie in the sky of what could be if we win. No, we got to win first. We got to put all that stuff together because, as you said, success at the end of the day, if you have it, everything else will fall. You are, and I say this to everybody I come in contact and talk about Football 52, Coach. I say, if you don't believe that this coach is passionate about this program and turning this thing around and really cares, I'm talking really cares, you come in here every Wednesday. You know, we're probably leaving at what, 6, whatever, to get here for a 7 o'clock recording. That is a rare thing. I've interviewed several coaches. A lot of it is kind of just the coach speaks kind of stuff. And you and I will probably get into some of that at some point. But your dedication to come in here and do that already shows me, man, this guy is passionate about his program. He's not just locking himself away, watching film, working with his players. He knows that there are other things that he has to do in an area like this to grow that program. What is the vibe that you're getting out in the community outside of us? Because I know you're out and about. I know you're doing golf tournaments, and obviously you had that awesome camp a couple of weeks ago. What kind of vibe are you getting from some of the Bears fans, whether that's a message to you or an email to you, or you just run into somebody, not run into somebody that's bad after what happened yesterday. You just see somebody in a store or something like that. What is the vibe you're getting?
Okay, great question.
It's a loaded question.
The vibe in this community is we know what's going on at UNC. We know you're losing. And from there, it kind of varies a little bit. You know, and there's people that are super supportive, undying loyalty to what I'm doing. They understand what I'm doing. I'll bring up my he's become a good friend, John Zurbergen, and one of the great legends on the field and from a great era in UNC football. And he is constantly hammering his teammates and community leaders in this community like, hey, we got to help these guys. They're working at it. I believe in them. I believe they have the right plan. We got to help them get over the hump. And so he's just a major asset to us, right? And then we have others who are like, yeah, things aren't going so well. You got a tough job, coach. And you know, you can just see in their eye they don't believe it's going to happen, but they're aware. I'm going to contrast that with when I was at SUU, when I was at Southern Utah, and a large part of the community when I first got there was unaware. It was so bad that people had stopped paying attention. I inherited an 18-game losing streak there. at Southern Utah. And I can remember being we had a game one Saturday when it was also Halloween, and my kids were young at that time, and we won the game. And I felt great. This was early in our time there. We didn't have a whole lot of wins. And we won the game, and it was over a really good opponent. And I was trick-or-treating with my kids in my own neighborhood, and I lived in Cedar City. And it's not a very big community. And in my mind, everybody knew wins and losses what was going on. And I go to this house that I'd always seen. They fly a Bama flag on game day. And I'm not offended, right? It's two different levels of football. Sure. You're going to be a Bama fan and an SUU fan. I don't care. So I go and knock on this guy's door. My kids go and knock on the door, and they're trick-or-treating. And he recognizes me. Hey, coach, what's going on? How did it go today? I was like, here's a college football fan in a college football town.
Yeah.
And he had no idea whether we had won or lost. I don't expect that he'll, you know, be there necessarily, right? People have things to do. They've got their own games to watch if they're college football fans. But that happened over and over and over in Cedar City, and that generally doesn't happen in Greeley. People are interested, and when it flips, it's going to be standing room only at the stadium, and that's going to be cool.
No, it is. And I think we discussed this the last couple of weeks. This community is growing so much, not just Greeley, but all of the areas throughout northern Colorado. It's grown so much since I've been here. I moved up here in 2005. That means more fans. That means more potential fans and getting that message out. So, yeah, I'm with you as far as just getting that word out and then seeing that turn. It could make for one epic story.
Yeah, it's I've seen it. I've seen it in person. I know how rewarding it is. That's why I'm addicted to it. You know, these guys that have moved around. You take Nick Saban, who obviously I, you know, idolize and just want to, you know, the idea of achieving that kind of what he's achieved. Just it's unreal for most coaches. Like what was it, 7 national championships or something? But also, you know, he didn't set out to do what we're doing here. That's not. He didn't turn around Alabama.
Yeah,
he took the team with the most national championships in history and won more. Right, he won at LSU. Right, he was always at, you know, even back to his first head coaching job, Toledo. Toledo's always been the strength of the MAC and had the most and the biggest so he set out to embark on a different type of career, and that's fine. Like I said, there's no comparison between what. He's accomplished and what I have or will accomplish. I'm not trying to compare it except for to say completely different challenge that he set out to do versus what I'm setting out to do for a second time here. And really what I see is my niche in this business is, you know, winning a national championship anywhere, winning a league championship anywhere is special and unique and changes people's lives. I think when you win at a place that hasn't won, it changes whole communities.
I think you're 100% right. You know, like I said, I moved up here, started going to college in 2005. And from that point on, you know, I'm dabbling, learning a little bit about UNC, but it was what it was. I mean, they were jumping into the FCS at that time. That was all new. It was supposed to be a process. I didn't know exactly all the ins and outs of what that looked like. And then as I got working at KFKA and, you know, you follow along with those programs and you're hopeful every year. I mean, you name it. There would be a certain quarterback that you're really excited about and then the guy gets hurt and then that's the season. And it just, there's always been those, like you said, the talent's there. How do you pull it all together? And I suppose a lot of that doesn't start tomorrow, but it really ramps up because you got practice rolling tomorrow, leading up August 1st tomorrow, leading up to that first game of the season. So I know the work has been going on all year, but now a new level of work begins with the team meeting today and practice tomorrow.
Yep, just a new level or a different type of work, and one that the players have been excited about. Yesterday was report day, but no practice. And so it's like it's a day that everybody's excited about all year, but the veterans kind of know, like, everybody gets real excited, and then we report, and like all day, it's just boring. It's like it's pictures, it's compliance paperwork. Every person in our athletic department that kind of runs an entity, whether it's compliance, training room, mental health, there's just equipment, strength conditioning. They all have to kind of do their beginning of year speech. And the NCAA will not allow us to do any actual football meeting. So we can't get in and say, okay, here's the first day install. Let me teach you about how to run this route or how to make this block. We don't do any of that. And there's nothing on the field, and there's not even a lift. There's nothing physical that the guys do. So there's all this excitement, and the guys report, and then it's like, that kind of sucked.
Yeah.
But today, as I sit here this morning, today's the day where we start and we actually do practice and we're on the field, and it's a really fun day.
Yeah, and you kind of just – you're getting, as you said, installs, talking more football stuff. What time is practice tomorrow? 2 o'clock tomorrow on Thursday?
We're 2 o'clock every day except Saturday. Well, Sunday's a day off every week. Saturdays we go at night. Our first couple of games are on the road under the lights, and so we want to practice under the lights here during training camp and get used to that environment, used to that time, get the body clocks kind of used to that approach. So we'll go Saturdays at 7, and then every other day we'll go at 2 o'clock. But we do have a caveat in the schedule if there is lightning forecast in that early afternoon 2 to 4 time frame. We don't want that to take us out of our opportunity to practice, so we flip to our Saturday schedule. So it's basically the same morning schedule routine every day until about 1 o'clock, and then if we need to flip practice from 2 to 7, we do that. And generally, the lightning is not an evening thing here in this mm-hmm. part of Colorado, right? It's generally an early afternoon. So hopefully, we'll be able to maneuver around anything like light. We don't have an indoor practice. If you have an indoor practice facility, lightning doesn't matter, right? But we don't want anyone out there like struck by lightning.
Well, yeah, Coach, I'm looking forward to getting out there, watching a little bit tomorrow after my show. I'll bust over there. So I'm excited. I'm excited to start just seeing these guys run around. I know we won't be in pads for how long into practice will we go till you guys actually are in pads?
It's helmets only for 2 days.
Okay.
And then we go with the shoulder pads on day 3 and 4, and then full pads on day 5.
All right. Well, I've these podcasts have been so much fun, wanting to get an opportunity to just go out and see guys running around, even if it's not the real thing yet, even if it's not full pads yet. I'm excited about it, Coach. So, best of luck in this process, because now I know we're approaching August. August is tomorrow. That at the end of the month, there is a football game that you guys will be playing up against Incarnate Word. So all things start pointing to game day, and that's the stuff I was looking forward to the most, doing these podcasts with you.
Thank you. We're on a very rigid schedule. I didn't plan this out, but it's really cool that halfway through the year, episode 26 of 52, right? 52 weeks in a year is how we designed this thing. Episode 26 is somehow the first day of camp.
Yeah, it's kind of wild.
The first practice of the season. And I can't even articulate why that's cool.
I think it is.
It just seems like a good way to have set it up. And we didn't plan that. I can't remember when we exactly started.
No,
it was
January. Yeah, because we were going to start like a week or two before, yeah. But then it was like, hey, let's get everything ironed out, make sure this podcast studio is working and we can get it out effectively. And so we started maybe a week or two later. Yeah. So it's amazing how it kind of just synced up that way.
And I guess, if there's interest and we continue to do this into year two, it's now set up that way where we would always, halfway through would be when the season's getting started with that first practice. And then as we get toward the end, that's when the season's kind of the results are coming in. What are the results of all of this work, all of this discussion, all of this thought? And, I can't wait for those later episodes, 30s and 40s, when we're really seeing the results of everything that's been put in.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it, Coach. Well, I'll be out there tomorrow, so I'll see you guys after my show. I'll pop out and say hello, assuming I can make the drive okay. Now driving is an interesting... I am looking. Going through lights now, I'm like doing the old man thing, looking left and right, making sure. Now, has everybody stopped? So it does change how you drive a bit. So I'll probably be there. It'll just be a little bit slower.
My wife would tell you that I don't look at the lights. I'm totally looking at the traffic. And so there are times when we've been driving together and it's a red light and I go right through it because I didn't intend to. I'm looking at traffic, not the lights.
Yeah.
And I think it's because I have seen things like that happen and I'm not doing it the right way. Like every time she calls me on that, I'm like, oh geez, like I didn't even realize that I was totally looking at traffic. I'm treating it like a roundabout,
Well, that would have helped me yesterday if I would have looked at the traffic. I'm serious. So I'm looking at the light and I'm like, as you're turning, you don't want to go into the median. And so I'm paying attention to that. And that's all I'm thinking about until I'm about halfway through. And then, oh, this guy's ready to rumble here. We'll see what happens. But
I want to be clear. I'm not giving driving advice. Anybody who's driven with me, like, it's really frustrating. I drive super slow as well. And so that might be another reason why I'm, you know, just completely focused on traffic more than anything else. But they're generally, people are pretty frustrated if they're in my car.
Well, driving slow at least will keep you somewhat safer than driving ridiculously fast. Yeah. So you're doing that part right. Coach, good luck in team meetings today with practice. And we'll look forward to seeing you guys out there tomorrow.
Thank you, Brady.
All right, this has been Football 52, episode 26. We'll be back at it next week for episode 27, and we can start talking a little bit about what the guys looked like on the field. All right, but be sure to follow us on find these Football 52 podcasts through my whole show channels or available at 1310kfk.com. You have the entire list of every single episode that we've done, so there's the library there for you, again, at 1310kfka.com.